This podcast includes graphic depictions of true crime cases and may contain explicit language. Listener discretion is advised. Hey, this is Robin.
This is Jackie.
And this is Amanda.
And you are listening to We Saw the Devil, a podcast dedicated to horror, true crime, and all things macabre. If you want to follow us between shows, don't forget to check us out online. You can go to our website at www.wesawthedevil.com. You can follow us on Instagram at We Saw the Devil Podcast or on Twitter at We Saw the Devil. And if you want to follow specific co-hosts' social media, you can find the links to those on our website as well. Hello, everyone, and welcome to We Saw the Devil. Today's episode is going to be part one of our Lori Vallow mega update. So much has happened over the last week. We had the bond reduction hearing. We had the preliminary hearing being moved. We had an NBC Dateline special. We had insane emails. It's been a lot. We're going to release part one tomorrow, May 4th, and then part two will be coming out 24 hours later on May 5th on Tuesday.
Everyone's been waiting for this.
Oh my God. We've gotten messages. Are you guys going to, you know, do the update? Oh my God, Dateline. Oh my God, court case. And then Justin Lum has been like a rock star of epic proportions this week. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been a lot. And yeah, those messages are great. It really motivates us to keep doing it. So thank you.
It's been a busy week for Lori Vallow.
Right. I think the first thing I've been doing is like, okay, now what update? Now what happened? What email was uncovered?
Amanda is now Esquire, attorney at law.
That's me. I feel like I could write these now, especially for Means, because, you know.
I was about to say you could do a better job than Mark Means.
I'd at least spell the names right.
You should reach out to Lori through the telephone. You know, what was the name of that thing?
I couldn't find it. I couldn't figure out how to do it on my iPhone. I don't know. I looked in like on Google. I had Googled it and it said like there is this app. And I was like, well, maybe it's just for Android. I don't know. I couldn't figure it out. And then for some reason, the jail in Idaho didn't even come up. So I don't know. Maybe I did it wrong.
You should contact her and say you're offering your legal services.
I need some letterhead.
See how desperate she really is.
I'll get my letterhead up to date with my newfound, I guess, occupation.
Update your LinkedIn.
How did you get it? I read a lot of Lori Vallow court docs.
Yes, we both did. We have both been poring over affidavits and statements and discovery requests.
So, all right. Yeah, updates this week. It was a roller coaster.
Yeah, I'm exhausted.
Same.
So let's get into that. But first, there's more. big shout out again. Thank you to our patrons for making this possible. We have our executive producers, Shauna S., Ian, and Iris. Thank you so much for being executive producers of the show. And then we also have Amy, Derek, Michelle, Shauna F., and William.
Thank you.
The executive producers have an extra goodie that is in transit on the way to you. I ordered it, but everything shipping and whatnot is taking a little extra time because of COVID. And speaking of COVID, we hope that everyone is safe and doing well. I know we're all getting a little antsy and ready for life to return back to normal, which it never will, but
we can sure try.
Yeah, we can sure try. I hope you're doing well and staying safe. But if you have enjoyed our Lori Vallow coverage and you like our updates, not only our episodes, but also YouTube, please consider becoming a patron. We have some killer benefits. And do you want to talk about that, Amanda?
Yeah, you get all kinds of stuff. So there are private episodes. There are handwritten postcards. There are t-shirts. There are random goodies. So lots of stuff. Check it out. There's different tiers. So whatever you're comfortable with, we're here for you.
Yeah, as low as $3. And we love all of our patrons and really appreciate your support. And, you know, I realize times are currently very, very tough. But if you support the show, another thing that keeps our podcast alive is reviews. So iTunes is kind of the gold standard for reviews, guys. So, and it doesn't matter if you're on an Android.
Nope. You can still make an Apple ID and you know, leave a review, do the stars, all of that fun stuff, even if you are not an Apple user.
We would really, really, really appreciate you taking just like 30 seconds to drop us a review on iTunes. And again, you can do that with or without an iPhone. You can even do that without a phone. You can do it on the computer.
Getting crazy now.
Yeah, I know. Finally, but not least, you can find us at wesawthedevil.com. We Saw the Devil Podcast on Instagram, Twitter. We're also very, very active at We Saw the Devil. And then Facebook also as We Saw the Devil. We have many, many, many places.
And with that, today is May 3rd. And these are the updates as of 5:30 p.m. With that being said, let's get started with some Vallow updates. If you did listen to our East Area Rapist episode, we did touch on this a tad, but I wanted to just review it a bit. On our last Vallow update, we discussed one of the discovery requests. And when we were going through, there were a couple people that we were speculating on, and then there was a couple people that we misspoke. So we just wanted to clear that up. Leah and Seth Bernard were actually Lori's neighbors in Rexburg. So I was able to verify their address and see their apartment number. So yes, they were in that same complex. It's just a coincidence that Chad also has kids named Leah and Seth.
Literally, what are the odds?
Right. Yeah. That's just a crazy combination. So
we apologize.
But yes, they were the neighbors and I did verify their address. I was able to find it and look at the apartment number. So they are in that complex. Zachary Cox is not Lori's brother. I believe it's her nephew. Adam Cox, though, is indeed her brother. And he's the one, too, I believe that Charles had been reaching out to. And from what someone had commented that Zachary was Lori's nephew. Now, I found his Facebook profile and I did look a little bit, but, you know, it's hard to see that tie. So I don't want to be incorrect in that. But I do believe that that is true. And then Jason Gwilliam is Tammy's brother-in-law. We did not say in-law, so yeah. Sorry about that. If you do want to verify that, too, her obituary does show it. It says siblings, and then it says Samantha, and then in quotes, Jason Gwilliam.
Yeah, so. And that was my bad on the episode. I actually was reading the obituary, and somehow, maybe I'm getting old, my eyes are getting tired, but I read that incorrectly, so.
So it wasn't like, you know, too far off on that. I know we did mention too on some of them, especially the Leah and Seth Bernard.
It's true. But it did happen. We are not infallible. It happened. We are sorry. Please accept our sincerest apologies.
But yeah, there were a ton of updates and a ton of different things that happened. One big thing, the talk of the town, is her hearing took place on the 1st. Yeah. So Friday, May 1st. Mm-hmm. There's so many thoughts that went into watching that hearing.
Oh man, that was a roller coaster. I felt like we were watching a Spanish telenovela and someone got shot in like a dramatic fashion, you know? And then, I mean, it was just like, it was crazy to watch. It was a roller coaster of emotions.
You thought of it a little differently than I did. I more put it in par with like an SNL skit.
Oh, man.
Based off of the things that Means was saying. And I feel so terrible for that poor man.
He got into it. I mean, he offered his services, but so this was literally about 2.5 hours long. Like between 2.5 hours long. And
compared to the other ones that were what, like 30, 40 minutes? Yeah,
it was a long one. And it was a shit show of epic proportions. So as everyone knows, I'm sure at this point, her bond was not reduced. It remains at $1 million.
Right. Oh my gosh. And I pretty much said there's no way, especially with all of the different allegations coming up. I mean, I know they're not supposed to like look at both, but come on. Attendees were limited and they had to wear a mask. And then what I noticed, though, so everyone's wearing these masks. And then did you see Means with his cool bandana thing?
Oh my god, he had like a bandana / like scarf thing that he had like wrapped around, and he looked ridiculous.
He was going for the cowboy look.
He was going for like the cowboy look or like a Great Value Johnny Depp or something. Like, it was ridiculous.
I can't even understand the amount of pressure and stress that poor guy's on, because think of how many people are watching him, you know, now versus 3 months ago, 4 months ago, where he just, you know, was just this little lawyer and, you know, little Rexburg things. Not because a lot of them still say, I can't believe that happened here. Nothing like that happens here. You know, LA and, you know, some of the bigger places maybe, but that poor, poor guy. But I will say too, so the first part like starts out with him asking if it's okay to sit instead of stand.
Right.
Right. And I was like, wait, what?
Are you
like,
just suddenly because disabled?
You're wearing a mask? Is that why? I don't know. It was just, it seemed very, you know, not professional to me to ask a judge that. And then I actually laughed out loud and I had to rewind it and have my husband come listen to, because when he was talking about the prosecutor's affidavits and that they were single spaced versus double spaced. And then he actually looked up the rules on the filings. And I was like, okay, so if he had enough time to look up these rules to complain about the spacing, I think he had enough time to reply, because his whole thing was, I didn't have enough time to reply. They did it too late. Isn't that a good strategy? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, like, okay, I'm going to do it last minute. So you have to stay up all night and not, you know, have to reply and then not be, you know, ready for the game tomorrow. But sure, let's complain and look up the rules. And then the judge even offers to give him more time. And I was like, oh, I'm so embarrassed for you, buddy.
Oh, he had like a whole list of excuses too. So he started out and he was like, well, it's hard. Like, I live in Boise and I have to drive to speak to Lori and she has no way of making money in prison. And oh my God, you know, coronavirus, Chad's bucks just aren't selling right now. People don't have money to buy bucks and the economy, it's so bad. And just poor Lori, she can't make money and she's broke. Like, he just had this entire list of excuses.
Yeah. And that judge wearing the mask, you know, at the beginning, I know she took it off, but like, that mask probably saved her looks because she couldn't be as expressive.
Oh my God.
Because I feel like I would be like, are you freaking kidding me? You are a lawyer, sir. You, you know, took a lot of schooling to be able to stand here and complain about silly things like
drive,
stay up all night, do your work. I don't know. But yeah, I thought it was funny that she like offered him more time.
He's had plenty of time and this has been pushed off and he utterly failed. And then he brought up for some reason, I did not have. Okay, so just like with the apocalypse, you know, 2020 coronavirus bingo card, I didn't have murder hornets on that bingo card, right? And for some reason with the Lori Vallow case and her bond reduction hearing, I did not have means citing Bill Barr's memo on religious freedom, like during coronavirus, on this like apocalypse card, on Lori Vallow's card.
It definitely caught me by surprise.
Oh man. It was overall just like, I wonder if Means has any sort of affiliation with Chad. Like, where did they find him? He is, in my mind, especially after seeing this performance, he's one step, like, he's on the same level as, like, an ambulance chaser that you would find on
the deserted road.
Yeah, like, on a deserted road. What, like, what happened?
I don't know. They hired him at Walmart? I don't know.
That's going to be the only job he can get after this.
Poor guy. Like, I feel really bad. Like, I can't even imagine just going from your typical case to this shit show. But also, like, you can politely decline.
Well, this is completely out of his area of expertise as well. So it kind of makes me wonder, why did they hire someone who has no experience with this?
Well, I mean, we're almost to the end of the world, so maybe they were just trying to throw him a bone.
Maybe he was one of the only few that would accept it. I don't know.
Yeah, but poor guy. Like, I feel bad. I really feel bad for him.
Well, apparently Lori's also displeased.
Oh my gosh. So Nate Eaton was told that Lori said that was a waste of money under her breath after the hearing. And girl, yeah, it was.
You have to be a special kind of low in your life to have Lori Vallow looking down at you.
I can't think about it from that aspect. No,
right?
Oh, poor little, poor guy. Like, someone send him something nice. he's not going to get her out of jail. So, I mean, we owe it to him.
Right, God. And then also, if you've been following our show, one of the last Lori Vallow updates that we did, we discussed in depth the Release Lori Vallow Facebook page and the batshittery over there. Well, the owner of that Facebook page is like, he is outright angry at Mark Means. And all of a sudden, a whole slew of posts came out on the Release Lori Vallow page. And he is angry. Yeah.
Well, speaking of which, they did try to at least get her some more court costs. Someone did. You heard about that,
no.
Right?
No.
So they, someone, I don't know if it was in this group or some other group, made a GoFundMe account.
Oh, yeah.
And it was quickly taken down. But when I did look, luckily no one had given any money to it. But I could only imagine, you know, them getting all pissed off. And they're like, fine, we'll pay for it ourselves. And like, make the GoFundMe under Chad's name. But yeah, that was fake. If you donated, like, I'm sorry for you.
Yeah, so many people thought it was real, too. And I was like, guys, it's clearly fake.
I think I sent it to you, and I was like, what?
A fake Chad Daybell Facebook page sprouted, and so many people thought it was real. And so people were messaging this fake account, where are the children? And whoever person is, he was replying to them and being like, the children are fine, and making all of these, like, random religious statements. Guys, yeah. Chad Daybell is not currently on Facebook, at least, like, publicly speaking, just so you know.
I think he does have a Facebook somewhere, but I think it's private. And at Lori Vallow on Twitter is not actually Lori Vallow.
Oh, my God. But it is hilarious. It is hilarious.
If you're the owner of that page, though, I commend you. It's hilarious.
It is absolutely hilarious. Lots and lots of portal jokes. And they are greatly appreciated. But, yeah, follow Lori Vallow on Twitter if you can, because it is hilarious. And also, again, I will pimp this out until the day I die, Helen Keller is also on Twitter. So follow that too.
Well, another speculation that stemmed from this hearing is Lori pregnant? I've seen that rumor on almost every Lori Vallow page, and I will agree that there are some questionable screenshots, but also she's wearing a bulletproof vest underneath, so I'm sure it looked kind of funky.
And okay, I will gladly eat crow and apologize and, you know, shave my head like Britney Spears if she is actually pregnant. But like, to me, she doesn't look pregnant. It is just very, very...
That is recorded, by the way.
Yes, it is. It is now. Oh, God. That's like my one vanity thing in this entire world is my hair. But yeah, it's very, very clearly, if you look up other cases with other people who, like, even Jody Arias, right, from Arizona, mm-hmm. Any big case that had a lot of media spotlight where they had to wear a bulletproof vest, she very clearly is just wearing a bulletproof vest.
I mean, that's what it looked like. I guess we don't know what was exactly under there, but
yeah. I don't want to know, frankly, but
no. But I did enjoy, I know we couldn't get the lipstick this time because, you know, mask lipstick doesn't look as good, but I did enjoy how just defeated she looked. Like, every time it zoomed on her face and her eyes, she was not looking good.
The cherry on the shit sundae for the defense, and I was literally screaming at my computer monitor. So at one part, Merk Means is talking, and the judge literally said, quote, "You don't really want the court to make judgments based on speculation right now, do you?" And I was literally hollering at the TV. And then Merk Means, because he didn't defeat himself enough, went outside after this attempt at bond reduction and did a press conference with people and answered questions. And outside, I forgot the exact question that someone asked him, but he made a comment about how guilty people are entitled to legal representation, and you could see the panic and oh shit, like, wash over his face. And then he immediately followed it up with, "I'm not saying Lori's guilty." I mean, it was just a bad showing that day. It was a really bad showing.
He was tired. He was trying to read all the court documents that weren't double spaced. It's hard.
No.
Oh, poor guy. Man. If you want to watch it, I know Justin Lum posted a link. I think the link is like 3 hours, but a half hour of it is just everyone like entering the room. So it's about 2.5 hours. And yeah, it is a spectacle to be seen. But anyways, back to more court documents, because this is my favorite thing to do now. There was a couple affidavits that were released. One was with Lieutenant Ron Ball. I'll go into the numbers, so if anyone does want to look at it too. Number 3, on or about March 31st to April 1st, 2020, I was listening to the jail phone calls for the above-named defendant, which was Lori. So he's the one that caught the recording. So everyone's been talking about the recordings again this week. And then it goes on to continue. Number 4, I began listening to the phone calls made on March 31st. The phone call was between the defendant and a male's voice who I did not recognize. The conversation quickly turned to the status of the court hearings and that the male speaker had some interviews lined up. The male's voice then said something to the effect, "I can't talk about it right now because they're listening." But remember, he didn't know. Right. Number five, once I heard the statement, they're listening. And due to the statements regarding court hearings and interviews the male said he was going to conduct, I became concerned that this conversation was between the defendant and her attorney. I quickly hit stop on the Tellmate playback software and ceased listening to the call. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Number six, very soon after the call, I discussed it with Special Agent Ricky Wright of the FBI and concluded that I should call the jail. Number seven, he called the jail and spoke with Lieutenant Jared Wilmore, and I'm bringing this up because his is the next mm-hmm. one, and informed him of the call between the defendant and her attorney that had been recorded. So if he's right and he's being, you know, truthful, if they say because they're listening, that normally means that someone might be listening.
Then we have the affidavit of Lieutenant Jared Wilmore. And he stated in his affidavit, I am the lieutenant charged with supervision over the Madison County Detention Center. He gives additional details about himself, but more or less, he's been there since 2016. So he's not a brand new employee.
Right.
According to the lieutenant, and you can also see Justin Lum's post of the affidavit and the full call log, right? It actually gives a call log of numbers that Lori has dialed and like how long she was on the call and so on and so forth. Interesting to note for me, where's Lori's family? Where's her mom? Where's her dad? They're all alive. Like, where are they? And one of the numbers that has been confirmed that she's spoken to at one point for 80 minutes was her sister, Summer Shiflett.
Ooh, and she's been with Melanie at her hearings.
Yes.
So I wonder if it's like the middleman to get information between the two of them.
Right? Exactly. That was a very interesting piece for me. Also in Lieutenant Wilmore's affidavit, he said his staff made sure to turn off phone call recording for 24 hours on March 30th when Mark Means came in to meet with Lori. And there mm-hmm. are call log details labeled as Exhibit A on this piece. The next day, March 31st, Means returned to have paper signed by Vallow. And a deputy acted as a messenger to take the paperwork basically from Means back to Vallow in another room so she could sign mm-hmm. it before bringing it back to Means in the lobby. Then Means got on a call with Lori, but according to Wilmore, he never asked for the recording to be turned off. And apparently, right. Means is well aware of how it works. And he never actually asked for the recording to be turned off. So two calls were made, and Lieutenant Wilmore said that both calls would play a standard warning that the conversation is subject to monitoring and recording.
Right. I think that was just his angle for the hearing to try to get her out. There was no other reason.
And then Lieutenant Wilmore also said that security footage shows Mark Means taking photos inside the detention center on March 31st.
Right. Well, he even says that there is the rules posted very clearly when you walk in there. I don't know why he was taking pictures. Maybe it's for their break, you know, when they try to get her out of there. I don't know. Interpreter, poor guy. In his own world. He is so stressed out. Someone needs to check on him.
Okay, so also in the affidavit, Mark Means's visits are documented by a, quote, out-of-cell log. And that's attached as Exhibit B if you want to look over the affidavit. And staff did not know about the two recorded calls on March 31st until Lieutenant Ron Ball called. And the first call was 1 minute and the second call lasted 28 minutes. So we're looking at a total of 29 minutes between two calls of recorded mm-hmm. Lori Vallow calls that Mark Means has literally turned into this huge issue.
I think number 23 on that affidavit was the most interesting. And he just talks about how he reviewed the phone logs. He found the call on March 31st. The first call took place at approximately 14:53 and lasted 1 minute. The second call took place at 14:55 and lasted 28 minutes. I immediately found it strange that the calls had been recorded because I had turned off the recording on March 30th, specifically for the same defendant and her attorney. I also found it strange that I knew her attorney was aware of the recording and it could be turned off at the visitor center. I called Tellmate and informed them that the 28-minute call needed to be removed from our records. Strange thing there. Do they still have it?
I wonder. Is it on the cloud?
Right. And then he says, I do not have the ability to delete phone calls. Due to what I perceived to be strange circumstances regarding the recordings of the calls, I purposefully left the 1 minute phone call in our records for evidence that those phone calls started with the standard warning that the call was subject to monitoring and recording. Hmm. So, like, I don't know if he just phased out because you hear that so frequently when you make calls that he just didn't notice. But also the day before he did notice, so kind of weird.
It is very weird.
But another fun thing that happened this week, Lori's preliminary hearing was moved to July.
Woot woot.
Yeah, I was hoping it was after the 22nd, just so I could see like her face of shame after. And we all know what happens on the 22nd, right?
The end of the world. According to Chad and all of them, the world is ending on July 22nd. So actually, we have a countdown. It's what, 80 days from today? 80 days.
Well, yeah. Well, she goes for her hearing. It says the 9th through the 10th at 9 a.m. So, I mean, the world ending is not going to save her. She won't be able to leave. I guess, you know what? Scratch that. Whatever happens at the hearing, mm-hmm. she's going to be able to just take her portal out to make sure that she's ready for the 22nd then. Maybe that's the angle. Now, my favorite thing that I saw actually this morning, I have already joined the Facebook event, the Daybell Doomsday.
I laughed so hard when you sent that to me.
The invite says, invented, written, and produced by Chad Daybell and maybe Lori.
Because they just simply don't know.
Yeah. So thank you to Tylee and JJ Facts versus Speculation for that
job. Oh, that was so funny.
So what else do we have this week?
So as of April 29th, Mr. Chad Daybell is now also being represented by Mark Means.
Oh, man. They're both going down forever.
So he let his lawyer go, Chad Daybell, the one that he was, that he had hired and had on retainer, I guess, let him go. And Chad Daybell decided to pick up Mark Means. And there's various speculation as far as why he would do that. One would be so he has a direct line to what is going on and the evidence that the prosecution side has, that the state has, potentially against him, right? So he's able to stay up to date on the items from discovery, you know, whose stuff, like Ian Pulaski's, Melanie's, the devices, the emails, so that he can actually stay up to date on that information as well. Basically have a pipeline into it, right? Mm-hmm. And I've been thinking about this, that because Chad is an author and because he's supposedly, and Christopher Perrette of Avow has also made commentary on this, that Chad's writing a book on all of this.
Oh, for sure. He needs the money.
Terribly. So I'm pretty much personally pretty sure that the Son of Sam law will end up coming into this, because it's only going to be a matter of time before Chad is indicted, right? Mm-hmm. We'll get into our speculation on that later. For those of you who are not familiar, and I'm only bringing this up because I see so much speculation in so many groups about how Chad and Lori are going to make so much money off of selling their story from this.
Yep.
Just so you know, the Son of Sam law does exist. And the Son of Sam law is active in 45 states, and Idaho is one of them. What it does is it prohibits criminals from profiting off of the publicity of their crimes by doing things like writing books, selling it to publishers, selling their rights to filmmakers and film studios. And the law authorizes the state to seize money from deals like book and movies, biographies, and paid interviews, and use it to compensate the criminal's victims. So the law, I guess, as you can imagine, was passed after David Berkowitz, Son of Sam, was arrested in August of 1977 because, you know, he had this, the dog talked to me, the dog told me to do this. And there was such an intense media presence of Son of Sam in the media at that point that, and then also the police and the prosecutors were scared that he might sell his story or write a book himself about it. So the New York State Legislature at that time passed preemptively legal statutes, the first legal restriction of its kind in the U.S. So using New York State as an example, the original New York law has been invoked 11 times between 1977 and 1990. Idaho does have Son of Sam law. So let's say that Chad is indicted here soon and charged or convicted, you know, of any of this, they cannot actually write books and make money off of it or even get paid for interviews at that point. So I'm pretty sure that this is going to be relevant here in the future. And then Chad fucked himself, but he's not going to be able to write a book again, at least on this topic. So I keep seeing him say, and his supporters say, well, Chad's just sitting back and writing a book and it's all going to be okay. And well, guys, if he's convicted of this. He ain't gonna be allowed to write no more books. Let's talk about, and this is, as far as the cast of characters, right? We don't have a terribly new amount of characters this week, but one person who I found the most interesting this week and the most news about this week is Melanie Boudreau.
Yep.
Do you want to talk about, she had some activity on her Facebook page this week.
Melanie, she actually reactivated her Facebook page and put up a long 31st birthday post. Mm-hmm. But Justin Lum actually posted the screenshots of it. And that day that it was up, you could actually see it. It was a public post. But I can no longer find it anymore. So I think she went back to private.
She did. She quickly realized that that was a very, very, very poor life decision.
She talks about her birthday. She talks about her kids and how they're being kept from her since October, how she briefly went to Utah County Jail for a couple hours. She also brings up something interesting that also came into play. I think they mentioned it in the Dateline episode as well, that she was unjustly taken away from her mother at age 6 and was told a manner of lies about her. So I was trying to dig and find any other information that I could, you know, find as far as her mother and her being taken. Who knows? But while I was looking, I was able to see a post in one of the Facebook pages. It's, I already referred to them once, but Tylee and JJ Facts versus Speculation. And someone, I don't know if they had Adam Cox's book or, you know, they were able to get some quotes from it, but they said that he mentions it briefly in his book, and it's called My Crazy Radio Life.
Well, I think it's also worthy noting, too, not to interrupt you, that Melanie is Lori's niece. Now, Melanie's mother was Stacy Lynn Cox Cope, and she died at age 31 in 1988. We spoke about her, God, in like episode 2 of this Lori Vallow stuff, because it came out that her mother is the one who died supposedly of a diabetic coma. And then there's unconfirmed, it's been everywhere, but it's pretty much common knowledge, although I haven't found the exact source for it, that Alex Cox was there and then stole her credit cards after she, you know, as she was dying, and used her credit cards that same day. But that's Melanie's mother, Lori's sister, Stacy, who died back in 1988. That's how Lori and Melanie are connected, for those of you who don't know.
Right, right. And as far as her being taken, I've seen a couple different things saying that, you know, she was a different age. And actually in the piece from his book, and again, I don't physically have the book. I can't read it. I was going to actually look for it, but he says she had gone through a terrible divorce while she was very ill. Her husband kidnapped her daughter, and then they put in quotes Melanie, who was age 8. Melanie, though, says age 6. Remember that. And she was unable to make contact with her because Stacy, her health was failing. I don't know. And again, that story is interesting, but it really doesn't help this case, I guess.
No, it doesn't really have much to do, honestly, with the case. I think that in the info on Stacy Lynn Cox Cope dying has been out for a while, right? Like since this case, this case even hit the public. Ashley Banfield of Court TV, if you guys have been on Facebook at all, you follow the Lori Vallow any groups, you've probably seen the Court TV ad for it. Of yeah. Ashley Banfield, like, jogging through her neighborhood and being like, crazy new information on the Lori Vallow case. Another dead, you know, relative, a dead person. This last Tuesday, Court TV did a special on this, and they're trying to frame it, yet another dead person in Lori Vallow circle.
Yeah, they said number 5 or something, and I was like, girl, like, this is forever ago. And what I didn't like about the Court TV thing, and I understand that, you know, they talk about a ton of things, so they don't just focus on, you know, one story at a time. But they were mixing up the names.
Badly.
Yeah, they kept referring to, like, saying stuff about Lori, but they'd say, and Melanie, something, something, Summer and Alex and Adam were her siblings or something like that. And I was just like, okay, no.
No, it's true. And they don't know even who Tylee's dad was. They don't know which kids belong to who and how people are related. I mean, it was super, super, super sloppy.
Yeah. And like, I mean, I had it on. And then after they kept like misidentifying things and that they took so much time just to talk about her grave being unkept, I was like, okay, you guys are really pulling at strings. Yeah, I mean, I had it on while I was cooking, and I was like, okay, I get it. It's interesting, but also just the basic facts that they were just misspeaking. I'm not saying that they were saying incorrect things. It's just you can tell that it was kind of just thrown together, or they're just not invested in the case as much. So if you want like a quick update, sure. I think it was like, what, 15 minutes or something?
Yeah.
I found it on YouTube earlier, but it's still not very thorough. But anyways, back to Melanie's post. she talks about, you know, her faith quite a bit, and then how she's learned to find joy in circumstance and how she's forgiven people. And then she ends it, and to you, Braxton, Brighton, Blake, and Breeze, I celebrate you today and how much love I have for you. So those are her kids.
She cared so much. She literally just told Ian to keep them and left with Lori.
Right. But we never were able to see the second part of that text. Remember, it wasn't, you couldn't open it fully. It was just one screenshot. So I'm wondering what else was on that. Mm-hmm. I will say, though, TV did bring up a good point. Melanie's post, because she reactivated her Facebook, still said Melanie Boudreau.
It did.
Why didn't she change her last name to her new husband?
She did, apparently. It came up as Melanie Boudreau, and then she apparently did change it to Melanie Pawlowski, and then immediately, because she got a lot of shit for that post, because people were like, there's JJ, there's Tylee, they're missing, there's, you know, this entire case going on, and you're coming on and being like, I'm so grateful for, like, I swear to God, Melanie has a Live, Laugh, Love poster hanging in her home. That's just how this post, just so tone deaf and no.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I was able to find her. I think this is it. Her Facebook again. Now it's Melanie Pawlowski and then in quotes, Cope.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Their profile picture is her and Ian now in whole Wyoming. Anyways, yeah. So, I mean, she had a birthday post. Didn't really, yeah, didn't say anything about those kids. And I understand her kids are being, kept away from her. But honestly, with who she associates with, I would do the same. All right. So one of the big updates this week were some new emails. Chad really loved to send Lori creepy emails.
Oh, man. Oh, apparently in this particular email, Lori requested it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was back in October 30th of 2018.
This email is 11 months before the children disappeared. And both Chad and Lori are still married to their spouses. Chad is still married to Tammy, and Lori is still married to Charles.
Right. And weird thing about this date, though, too, I just want to say, and we will talk about Dateline, I promise. But per Dateline, just something interesting that I just noticed, is they said in fall of 2018, that's where Lori and Melanie attended that Preparing a People conference. And that's where Chad was talking about his books.
Ooh.
And shortly after, that's when Lori and Chad hit it off and started doing the End of Days podcasts.
Possibly fleshing out the timeline. No, that's really interesting. I didn't even realize that.
I had to look at my notes, but yeah. So they just said fall of 2018. Yeah, I mean, they should have probably been doing Halloween things, but they were sending creepy emails instead.
So in this email, and it's really interesting, because if you've noticed in a lot of emails, and especially the document that Ian Pawlowski supposedly made an outline of the beliefs, Chad takes traditional Mormon terminology and theology and then kind of perverts it and twists it into his own, brand, I guess. Mormons believe in multiple probations. And if you recall our awesome guest, Ian, who came on and helped define a lot of stuff for us, right? Answer questions, define certain beliefs. So Mormons believe in multiple probations. They believe that they have lived entire lives already as other people, and that they have multiple lives on this earth. So, for example, Chad, as we've discussed previously in our episodes as well, Chad claimed that he was James the Just in a former life. And he claimed that Lori was the grandmother of Joseph Smith. In this document, what it is Chad offers the family history documents, and then he has family history information, current numbers on Earth at this time of each estate level. These totals represent the light spirits, the dark has equal numbers. So basically, it sounds like Lori asked him to give his reading on basically her family. Who's light? Who's dark? Are they good or are they bad? But what Chad does is he assigns light or dark and goes through Lori's entire family, people who were in her orbit. So yeah. We have on this document, and it's creepy. Like, this is actually, this gave me chills.
It did. It's so odd, like, just weird. And then I really wish we could see what she sent him. Like, did she send him information about each person? Did she send them pictures of every person? Like, how does he know?
So on this, the scale, whether it's light or dark, goes from a 1 to a 6, right? So you're either good or bad, like, you know, light or dark, 1 to a 6. Obviously, the higher you are, the stronger it is. Tylee was assigned a 4.1 dark spirit, and that broke my heart.
It did.
That broke my heart. Why did this man, Chad, and this is back in October 2018, how would he know enough about Tylee unless Lori told him that Tylee was dark?
It's super strange. And just what information is he going off of? Either, you know, like, where did he get these random numbers? I don't know when the first time he stayed with them was. I don't remember what date that was, but this was shortly after meeting.
Yeah, very shortly. I mean, and Chad was still living with Tammy. She was still alive and well at this point. 7-year-old JJ was assigned a 4.2 light spirit. So why was JJ possibly killed or discarded if he was light? Did he end up being an inconvenience for Chad when he and Lori, you know, so he and Lori could be together? That was shocking. So JJ was a light spirit.
Right. And normally when they're over, what's the threshold? If they're over a certain amount, they're not going to flip.
Right. Exactly.
So if they're over 4.1 or above, they rarely switch sides. So he was good for the long haul.
Chad also mentions Charles's first wife. Now, it's unsure who he's talking about, because a lot of people say that Lori, whenever she talks about Charles's first wife, that she's possibly talking about Cheryl Wheeler.
Mm-hmm.
Chad assigned Charles Vallow's first wife, assuming Cheryl Wheeler, who was actually his second, 2D, level 2 dark.
Right, and their kids. Why are they even talking about, you know, kids that aren't Lori's? Like, leave everyone out of that.
But going through some of these, we have Lori's parents are both 3L, so 3 light. They were good. Stacy, her deceased sister, was 3 light on Earth, but graduated to 4.1 after her passing. Alex Cox was just a lonely 2 light. Aww. Her brother.
And he could flip easily.
Yeah. Adam Cox, was a 3L. Laura, who was also another sibling who unfortunately passed away when she was an infant in the family, was a 3L on Earth, graduated to a 4.1. Lori herself, man, he had it big. Lori was a 4.3. Are we surprised? Summer Cox Shiflet, Lori's sister, was a 3L. Her husband, Summer's husband, was a 2L, borderline 2D. So I'm wondering if Summer didn't buy into the bullshit, or her husband didn't buy into it, made a comment against Lori. She advised Chad of that. But he, how can you be 2L, borderline 2D?
I mean, he's on walking that edge.
It's a tightrope in Chad's world, guys.
Oh my gosh, it's such a freak.
And then Chad went through Lori's marital history. So William LaGoya, who's Colby's father, 2D. Colby Ryan was a 3L. So Colby Ryan got a good, you know, good rating. However, Colby's wife, 3D.
That's scary.
Mm-hmm. She's literally like the second worst rated person on this list is Colby's wife.
I wonder, because she's like, yeah, your family's fucking crazy.
Then we get to Joseph Ryan, 4.3D. Not good, guys, on Joseph Ryan. And with a note of he is now sealed away, which, you know, obviously, and we're actually going to get into Joseph Ryan here momentarily. Right. But Joseph Ryan came up as a 4.3D. And Tylee Ryan came up. He assigned her 4.1D. So again, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's creepy.
Her fourth husband, Charles Vallow. Chad apparently like didn't have much hatred for Charles. Assigned him a 3L. Yeah. And then in parentheses, 1700s London. So apparently Charles and his other probations got around.
Yep.
His first wife was a 2D. Again, possibly Cheryl Wheeler. And then Amanda already discussed their children. Melanie Boudreau was given a 3 light. Brandon Boudreau was given a 3D. And then all of their children were given various ratings of light. But yeah, this is just like insane.
And I just want to know whatever she sent him, like what basis did he go off of? Did she say family stories? Did she tell them, you know, information about all of these people and like her perception of them?
And it's important to know, well, at least for me, my good friend, I love her so much, Julie Rowe, the crazy bitch, told Fox 10, Phoenix, in an interview that Chad had a gift identifying whether people were light or dark. Quote, "The thing is, when you have some of these gifts, it gets real tricky because you're not living in one dimension. You're living in multiple dimensions. And Chad had two near-death experiences, so his veil is kind of open." That Chad really just had a gift for it, but that by 2018, he changed and claimed he could see light and dark in people. She said that up until that point that he'd never brought up a system. So when Chad was publishing Rose books, he never like said, here's my system, here's my, you know, rubric that I use to judge people. He just said that he can kind of see it. And then now after this document came out where he says, you know, he's assigning people values on the level of darkness or lightness of their spirits, Rose says that that's new. And apparently that kind of got to Lori. She goes on to say, you cannot just go and test and say, okay, this person is a 4.1 dark. And don't forget that Roe herself is into all this mess too. But she says, quote, if that isn't a cult leader, I don't know what is. That's where I am now, because he was going around seeing things in people's homes, going to people now. Whether they joined a cult or realized that's what he was trying to do or not, he won't call it a cult. I think he thinks he's just starting a church. So that was a recent interview posted, it looks like 2 days ago, via Justin Lam on Fox 10 Phoenix. So apparently Julie Rowe is completely kind of turned on Chad, but even she says that his light dark stuff is bullshit.
Right. And even if it is just him trying to start a creepy, weird church, still, you don't, especially children, leave children out of all of your nonsense.
Well, I think it's pretty significant, too, that she finally, she used the word cult.
That is true.
Yeah. And interesting to note, too, on the email timeline, this was sent October 30th of 2018. Both Chad and Lori, again, reiterate, we're still married. Tammy and Charles didn't die until almost a full year later.
Right, when their bond started getting closer between Lori and Chad, obviously. That's horrible. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely horrible. And I'm so happy that they're finally investigating both of them for Tammy. Yep. And I know they're still looking at stuff for Charles.
Okay, guys, we are going to end part one here. So far, we have covered the bond reduction hearing, the preliminary hearing being moved, Melanie Boudreau, Annie Cushing, and various affidavits, the jail calls being recorded, and the batshit insane email that Chad sent to Lori analyzing the light versus dark content of her extended family and friends. So we are going to continue part two. It will go out tomorrow, and it will continue with more legal documents, requests for discovery, as well as a full analysis of the NBC Dateline episode. Until then, you can find us at www.wesawthedouble.com, on Instagram at We Saw the Devil Podcast, and on both Twitter and Facebook at We Saw the Devil. As always, if you have any questions, concerns, or commentary about today's show, you can email us at wesawthedevil@gmail.com. Don't forget, we put all of our episodes on YouTube as well. Please subscribe also to our YouTube, because we, as we stated last episode, do plan on making more videos. And if you love the show and want to support us, again, check us out on Patreon. We have some really cool stuff, some merch, benefits, private groups and chat, and you can help pick the shows. You can reach us on Patreon at patreon.com/WeSawTheDevil. Until next crime.